Wow, so we really have some important and interesting things to cover today. Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, August 7th, 2025. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. Now, I realized that yesterday's episode ran a little long because of the interview with Jeffrey Prather, which people absolutely loved that interview. It was really hard-hitting. But that interview, on top of the book chapters of my new audio book, The Financial Big Bang, well, that made it a pretty lengthy episode. So today, since I am introducing chapter 4 of the book, I'm not going to publish an interview, but chapter 4 is a very important chapter. It's called The Great Divide, The After Effects, and the Collapse of the Middle Class. I've also got a new document to share with you about the gold revaluation, something that just came up on my radar. So we'll be covering that today as well. Now, as you might know, every day I wake up and I ask myself, once I come to my sort of investigative journalism senses, I ask myself, what can I say positive about Trump today? I do. I have a pro-Trump intrinsic bias. And every day lately, I have been extremely disappointed because Trump proceeds to say something totally insane or incredibly stupid or highly offensive or what have you. And sure enough, it's like every day there's something else that lights up social media and everybody's going crazy over it in a bad way. You know, typically condemning Trump for what he said. And so today I got to play the video for you here. It's about 1 minute showing you what Trump said today that is got everybody up in arms, metaphorically speaking. He's talking about how awesome Operation Warp Speed was. That was the military-run rollout of the first COVID vaccine that killed a lot of Americans. Estimated 1.5 million Americans over the course of the vaccines. Trump wouldn't be responsible for all those, but definitely he's responsible for starting it. And he said that Operation Warp Speed was, quote, one of the most incredible things ever done in this country. And then he added that everything about it was amazing. Yeah. Yeah, everything about it was amazing. If you're trying to kill people with DOD-generated bioweapons, then yeah, sure, it was amazing. But let's hear Trump say it.
You were the driving force behind Operation Warp Speed, these mRNA vaccines that are the gold standard.
Right.
Now your health secretary is pulling back all the funding for research. He's saying that the risks outweigh the benefits, which puts him at odds with
research
the entire medical community and with you. What is going on?
Research on what?
Into mRNA vaccines.
Well, we're going to look at that. We're talking about it, and they're doing a very good job. And, you know, that is a pass. With Operation Warp Speed was, whether you're Republican or Democrat, considered one of the most incredible things ever done in this country. The efficiency, the way it was done, the distribution, everything about it has been amazing.
So there you go, right from Trump's mouth, and that's not a deep fake. That was a press conference. You can see the Space Force flag behind him there. So he says Operation Warp Speed was super amazing, and it was highly efficient. But highly efficient at what? Of course, you and I know it was highly efficient at exterminating Americans and destroying people's lives, destroying people's health, killing or injuring or maiming or disabling millions of Americans, including active duty military personnel. So the fact that Trump calls that amazing, and that here he is, what, like 5 years later or more, or nearly 5 years later, he is still doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this kill jab. Trump is completely tone deaf on this issue. It's very clear that he still considers it a success. It's very clear that Trump is all in with the mRNA vaccines, which are death jabs, and that he's still supporting Big Pharma, and that he has, at this point, just completely abandoned his support base. He's not doing anything that his support base voted for him to do, such as achieving peace with Russia, getting us out of wars in the Middle East, or other important things like that. He's not pretending to support his constituents. He's just doing whatever he wants and calling it amazing. Now, on this issue, as I played the video yesterday of RFK Jr., Secretary Kennedy of HHS, he's actually doing far more than Trump is, obviously, on this issue. Secretary Kennedy halted the research funding for 22 mRNA vaccine research projects. Now, reportedly, there are hundreds more that are underway, and he hasn't halted those, but he did halt 22, which is far more than anything Trump has done to help save innocent lives from, you know, vaccine violence, essentially. So Trump loves vaccines, and no doubt he would roll them out again. He would do the same thing again. He doesn't think that it was a mistake, and that's incredibly worrisome given, you know, where we are in history and the fact that the United States government, as I have reported here for a couple of weeks, is running a depopulation extermination agenda on purpose. And some of this is so that the United States of America can try to achieve some kind of financial solvency. So if you heard my book chapter, that's chapter 3 from my broadcast yesterday, and that's from my new audiobook, The Financial Big Bang, chapter 3 ends with the conclusion that the only real way for Trump to balance the budget, not even balance the budget, but just give the dollar and the treasury debt markets a little more runway and prevent the total implosion of the finances and the currency of the United States of America, is to kill off many millions of Americans one way or another through nuclear war or vaccines and pandemics or chemtrails or power grid failures that are engineered with cyber attacks, you know, all kinds of things. And I think most of you realize that that's true. A few people have a difficult time coming to grips with that, but most people understand what's happening at this point. Now, it turns out that the United States government is actually plotting its financial trajectory based on how many people it can kill off more quickly. And this comes from a government document that I'm going to show you here. Let's show the first page of it. And I'll cover this more in the book chapter coming up, but it says United States government required supplementary information unaudited for the fiscal years ended September 30th, 2024 and 2023. It talks about the sustainability of fiscal policy. Now on page 21, it has a chart. I'm not going to go through this in great detail right now because we're going to cover it better later. But it says present values of estimated OASDI expenditures in excess of income under various assumptions. And every dollar value shown here is in trillions. So the first line of this shows average annual reduction in death rates. And it shows that if there is a high reduction in death rates, that it causes a $31 trillion budget shortfall. But if there's a low annual reduction, then it only causes a $20 trillion shortfall. Okay. And if you go just beneath that table, it says the decrease and increase discussed below represent how much the low and high alternatives differ from the intermediate alternative shown in the table above. And the first bullet point here says the average annual reduction in death rates. If people die at younger ages, Social Security income relative to cost would decrease by $5.1 trillion. If people live longer, the shortfall would increase by $6 trillion. So that's a spread of about $11 trillion. In other words, as I've been talking about in my book here, The Financial Big Bang, Trump and his team are trying to figure out how to make the United States fiscally solvent. And in order to do that, he's got to figure out how to come up with trillions of dollars to pay off maturing debt, for one thing, you know, 20 plus trillion dollars in maturing debt over the next couple of years. But, of course, he's also got to be able to fund the Pentagon and all the Black Book programs and everything else. And so Social Security, as well as Medicare, pensions, and disability and other benefits, this puts the U.S. government over $200 trillion behind the curve here in future outlays. So it's actually way worse than $37 trillion in debt. It's a $200-plus trillion problem. And one of the ways that is talked about in this report, one of the ways to save about $11 trillion is to somehow get people to die younger. You know, to die suddenly. How could that be achieved? How could that be achieved? Well, the jabs, obviously. Operation Warp Speed, mRNA. So when Trump is talking about how it's an amazing program, I mean, what he's not saying is, yeah, it's an amazing program to balance the budget. You know, kill off people before you have to give them benefits. And they even call this the low-cost alternative. And if you look at the bottom of page 20 of this report, it says that the low-cost alternative is characterized by assumptions that improve the financial status of the program, such as slower improvements in mortality, and in parentheses they say beneficiaries die younger. That's right there in the text. Beneficiaries die younger. So that is one of the ways that they can solve an $11 trillion shortfall. Kill people younger. So again, I'll cover this in more detail coming up here, but that's just a shocking, astonishing thing right there. And then in the same press conference, by the way, Trump said that the Epstein files are, quote, total BS, but he used the full term there. So I guess we're back to the, I mean, can we keep track of this? One day, it's like, oh, the files are on my desk from Pam Bondi, right? And then the next day, Trump's like, oh, it's a Democrat hoax. And then the next day, you know, somebody will say, oh, we're looking into it now. You know, we've subpoenaed people over this. We've interviewed Ghislaine Maxwell now. And then the very next day, Trump's, oh, it's a total hoax. There's nothing to it. And then a newspaper in Israel comes out and publishes, this just happened, publishes that Trump is controlled by Israel because Israel has the files on Trump, the compromising files. So, you know, I mean, he certainly acts like that. He definitely does the bidding of Israel no matter what. But what files do they have on Trump? I don't know. Maybe it's financial files or something. Maybe it's got nothing to do with Epstein. But clearly they have leverage over Trump. And the bottom line is that, you know, Trump and half the GOP, they're not serving the American people. They're serving Israel. What did they do when Congress went on recess? Half of them flew over to Israel and got photographed touching the Wailing Wall, which isn't even the Temple Wall to begin with. It's an old Roman fort wall. So it's not even the right wall. But, you know, it's a humiliation ritual. And they all want to be photographed there, touching the wall, basically kissing the ring of Netanyahu. As a lot of people said, well, when Congress went on recess, they all went home to their constituents, which is Tel Aviv. They don't represent the American people, and neither does Trump. That's obvious. Neither does Trump. Now, shifting to other news, another thing that just happened is that the U.S. Treasury held an auction yesterday to try to auction off $42 billion in 10-year bonds. It did not go well. Foreign banks stopped buying. I mean, it became rather disastrous. So it turns out that it looks like only about half of the auction even succeeded. I guess they're going to have to try a new auction. They're going to have to raise yields, which increases the cost of debt. You're going to have to raise yields in order to convince more buyers to step in. And the Treasury actually lowered the price from 100 to 99.9596, basically giving a discount. which is very unusual. I mean, what is that, a 0.4% discount? Something like that. It's very unusual to see that. It shows desperation. So this is why my audiobook is so important right now, The Financial Big Bang, because we are just about at the end of the line here. We're in desperation mode. The Treasury can't find buyers for the money that it needs to raise just to keep the government solvent this year, you know, not to mention 2026. I mean, it needs that $42 billion to cover costs right now. And it's got no money stashed away for all the $200 trillion plus in entitlements that it owes. I mean, there is no money. It's gone. The only way they can plan to meet that is to tax more people along the way. And like we just covered, hope they can figure out how to kill people off younger so they can save $11 trillion on Social Security. I mean, that really is the government's plan. They're in the phase now where they're just trying to figure out how they murder Americans. And again, that's why Operation Warp Speed is such an efficient success. You see, that's why it's so amazing, because it's saving the government so much money to kill people off so much younger. So here's the question. When these Treasury auctions continue to fail, what is the government going to do as a stopgap measure? And as I'm talking about in my book, it's very clear that they are going to revalue gold. They're going to monetize gold, which is technically still only valued at $42.22 on the Fed balance sheet, which comes to about $11 billion, a little bit over, and it's nearly 262 million ounces of gold is what the Treasury claims to hold. Of course, we don't know for sure if that's true, but that's what they claim. So if they revalue that to something much higher than the current market value, say $12,000 an ounce, then they could raise about $3 trillion in additional funds, which would be way more than what the Treasury was trying to auction off right there, huh? $3 trillion. That's 3,000 billion, right? So that would give them some runway. And if they raise gold to $24,000 an ounce and then revalued it through the mechanism that I've talked about in my audiobook, then they could raise $6 trillion and then they could fund the government spending for maybe a few more years, possibly. Maybe. I mean, it depends on how many people are willing to buy the debt and how much debt is maturing. Frankly, there's at least $20 trillion that's maturing over the next couple of years. So I'm not sure where they're going to find all this money, but it's very clear they don't want people to live long enough to collect any of it. That's for sure. All right. Now, as we know, Trump issued an extra 25% tariff on India. He had threatened up to 100% tariffs. So the 25 is a lot less than that. But of course, the government of India denounced the move as unjust and unfair, basically characterizing it as a violation of international law, which it is. It's even a violation of U.S. law, because the president doesn't have the power to set tariffs by himself without congressional approval. But Trump doesn't care. No one's stopping him. They're running to Israel and praying at the wall. They're not stopping Trump from violating, you know, tariff laws. Anyway, as I mentioned yesterday, India is one of the largest exporters of pharmaceuticals to the United States. India and China are the top two. And India exports a lot of generic drugs that are, of course, the more affordable prescription drugs that Americans consume. And some of those drugs are made solely in India, can't be sourced anywhere else. This is also true for a lot of vitamins, by the way, sort of vitamin molecules and some plant extracts and things like that. India is actually very well known for its phytochemistry knowledge base, or botanical knowledge and botanical extracts and a whole lot more. I mean, look at the history of India and Ayurvedic medicine, for example. Well, it turns out that this 50% tariff is also going to destroy the supply chain for turmeric, which is one of my favorite medicinal herbs and superfoods. I drink turmeric every day in my smoothie, and I consider it to be absolutely essential. And the thing about turmeric is that most of the turmeric around the world, especially if it comes from places like Southeast Asia, tends to be heavily contaminated with lead, because they actually use lead in the processing of turmeric to get the skins off of the turmeric root and to make the root look a little bit more reddish colored, like more orange, make it look, you know, more vibrant. Lead does that, it turns out. So they add lead powder to the turmeric roots during processing. But India doesn't do that, but these other countries do that. And that's why when we are out there trying to source turmeric and we conduct the laboratory testing, what we find is that a lot of the turmeric in the world is heavily contaminated with lead. And of course, you know, we do mass spec testing of everything, and that includes lead, arsenic, cadmium, and mercury, and many other possible contaminants, you know, copper, nickel, whatever, aluminum. And we reject lots that have, you know, lead contamination or other contamination. And then the cleanest lots that we found for certified organic turmeric, they almost always come from India. And we know certain growers and certain exporters that do the best job and have the cleanest turmeric, right? And we've been working with them for years. So now that turmeric is about to go up 50% at wholesale. Right. So I wanted to remind you today, if you want to get some organic lab-tested turmeric root powder that's tested for lead and all the other metals, that's ultra clean, this is the time to get it, because we're going to be sold out. So go to healthrangerstore.com, search for turmeric root powder, and we do have 12-ounce pouches, I believe, right now. We're already sold out of the tinctures. That's gone. Now I don't know when we're going to be able to get it again. And I don't know how long we're going to have the root powder. So we're, you know, this is another way that Trump is messing with our supply chain. Not only does India manufacture transformers for building construction, you know, India makes about 60% of those, but India is a major exporter of both pharmaceuticals and turmeric and a lot of other plant extracts like ginger, for example. So this is going to create problems for us and for you if you're a customer of our store. So, you know, load up now while you can and get enough turmeric to last a while, because we don't know how long Trump is going to try to punish India. And what is Trump even punishing India for? For merely purchasing oil from Russia, which is something, I mean, the EU buys gas from Russia, tens of billions of dollars a year, and the US buys uranium from Russia as an energy source for the nuke plants. India buys oil from Russia and then has refineries in India that refine it into other products. And, you know, Trump is like, we're going to punish India. We're just going to slap a punitive tariff because they're buying oil from Russia. So Trump believes that he alone gets to tell every country in the world who they're allowed to buy things from and who they're allowed to sell to. And if Trump doesn't like what you're doing, he will tell you, he'll interfere. He'll say, you're not allowed to buy that product from that other country over there, even though it's got nothing to do with America. You're not allowed to buy that, and we're going to punish you. And that's exactly what he just announced on India. And yes, it's completely insane. It's an insane weaponization. I mean, it's really not a tariff. It's a sanction. It's an economic sanction, not only against India, but against the United States. Because so many of these Indian goods will no longer flow to the U.S. I just gave an example. Turmeric root powder that's organic, you know? Where are we going to get that now? Not a lot of sources that are clean. And if you thought that was crazy, just wait till Trump kicks in his 250% additional tariffs on all pharmaceuticals being introduced into the United States. That's about to kick off. I mentioned it yesterday. So that would mean that pharmaceuticals from India would be hit with a 300% tariff. If you thought drugs were expensive now, just wait. They're going to get insanely expensive. And Trump thinks that this is going to somehow shift manufacturing to America. Well, where are you going to grow all this turmeric in America, by the way? I mean, maybe you could grow it in certain parts of Florida, possibly, or maybe East Texas, but you'd have to have the infrastructure and the labor. You don't have the labor because all the illegals are being deported. You know, you just don't have the infrastructure for mass production of turmeric in the United States. And most of the U.S. doesn't have the climate for it. It's too cold. And, you know, what about pharmaceuticals? Does Trump think we could just set up pharmaceutical factories all over America? Doesn't work that way. Because, as I've also said, you still have to buy the feedstock molecules that go into the pharmaceutical synthesis to produce the end result pharmaceutical molecule. You know, you're not just making it out of magic or thin air. You have to have the source materials. And where do you get those source materials? India and China, for the most part. So, you know, it's like saying, well, let's make all our cars in America. Let's set up auto manufacturing. Okay, well, Ford and Toyota and Dodge and whatever, they've got manufacturing plants in America. Sure. Guess where the parts come from? The parts come from China and Japan and Korea, for the most part. And that's why Ford had to shut down when Trump had the tariffs on China, because Ford didn't have the neodymium rare earth material. So they had to shut down the production lines. You see? Yeah, you can make things in America, but you still depend on products from other countries that go into the manufacture in America. So I see these tariffs as actually an economic embargo against America. And as I'll cover in my audiobook section today, that is not a coincidence. Again, I'll cover this in more detail, but if you block imports, then you alter the GDP. You make the GDP more favorable because the GDP considers net exports out of America, but it subtracts net imports. Because one of the line items that goes into GDP is net exports minus net imports. So if you block the net imports by sanctioning all these countries, then you actually improve the GDP, which improves the debt to GDP ratio on the books, which then makes other foreign investors think that buying treasuries is less risky, which allows the U.S. government to set lower yields on those treasuries, which makes servicing the debt less expensive for decades to come. So in other words, by sanctioning exporters, effectively blockading the United States, blocking imports, Trump can sell more treasury debt to the world at a lower cost to us. So that's actually the secret here that nobody's talking about. In fact, I believe I'm the only person to have noticed this. I haven't heard anybody talking about it. And this is the first time I'm even talking about it publicly. But I'll cover it again in more detail later on. And I'm sorry to bring you this news, but one of our valued partners here, I mean, we don't have a financial relationship with them, but they're a friend of the podcast. I've interviewed the founder many times, the company called Safrax that sells chlorine dioxide. They have been ordered by the EPA to halt sales of their product in the United States. And it's the most insane reason that you could possibly imagine. Now, chlorine dioxide kills bacteria, it kills algae, you know, it kills so-called viruses, etc. And there's all kinds of laboratory testing in order to back that up. Chlorine dioxide is not used on crops. It's not used, I mean, it's not sold as being used on animals, although I put it in animal water containers. But because it's sold with claims that it can kill algae and bacteria, the EPA decided that it's a pesticide. That's right. They consider it classified as a pesticide. And since the EPA has control over pesticides, they decided to issue a warning to Safrax to say that you have to halt all sales to the United States based on the current labeling and claims of the product. Now, of course, this is completely insane. It's not being sold as something that you spray on crops. There are no such claims or usage applications or instructions associated with the Safrax product. And it's a product with 1,000 uses. You know, I've talked about why Safrax is so important for personal preparedness and for, you know, ranch maintenance and country living and things like that, and also emergency first aid. It's an emergency sanitizing molecule for like surface sprays, or you can sanitize doorknobs. In third world countries, they use it to sanitize hospital rooms and surgical equipment and all kinds of things. It's highly, highly effective. But the EPA doesn't want you to have it. Just like the FDA doesn't want you to have colloidal silver or, you know, cancer cures like the one that the late Greg Caton used to offer, CanSema. So they kidnapped him from Ecuador and they threw him in prison. They did that. They threw him on a plane in Guayaquil, flew him to the U.S. without any kind of extradition paperwork at all. They just kidnapped him in his driveway, took him to America, threw him in prison. Because he was selling from Ecuador a product with instructions on how it cures topical skin cancers, okay? Now, Greg Caton passed away a couple of years ago. I miss him. I interviewed him. And he was a courageous health freedom fighter. But that just shows you the kind of thing that the U.S. government does. The U.S. government functions as a terrorist organization. They put Greg Caton on the Interpol notification list, saying that he was wanted for his involvement in international drug trafficking. And by drug, they meant a cancer drug. But they didn't explain that in the Interpol bulletin. They said he's an international drug trafficker. Yeah, that's the way they roll. Totally dishonest. Total weaponization of the government against innocent people. Now they're targeting Safrax. And they're saying that, well, you can't sell Safrax because it's a pesticide. It's nonsense. It's not a pesticide. It's a sanitizing product that works miracles for many people. And I'm just glad that I already have some supply of that and that I've been able to donate it to lots and lots of people in Central Texas and different groups because, you know, there's so much flood damage in Texas recently that Safrax is very useful for combating mold and, you know, black mold, high humidity situations that can be very toxic. You need to sanitize those surfaces, especially for, you know, houses where the electricity is not back on and they're starting to mold. You know, you can make a spray, for example, out of chlorine dioxide, Safrax. It's just a tablet. You drop it into a bucket of water and then it makes chlorine dioxide water. And you can use a spray bottle and spray that on mold and algae and things like that. It's really, really effective. But the federal government doesn't want you to have access to it. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to ban things like DMSO coming up. You know, the FDA is always trying to ban natural substances like resveratrol or what have you, different vitamins, you know, always trying to do that. So now Safrax is, you know, they've got a legal team and they're going to have to go back and forth with the EPA and try to figure out is there a way to sell this product in the United States in a way that is labeled that the EPA is okay with it. I guess you won't be able to say anything about it at all. But it's just another example of how the EPA, even under Lee Zeldin right now, you know, still carrying out acts of terrorism against the American people. Now, Lee Zeldin is doing a good job overall. I do want to be clear. I strongly agree with almost everything that Lee Zeldin has done. And, you know, tearing down the climate change hoax is a very important step. Reversing, you know, some of the endangerment findings of carbon dioxide. Yeah, that's critical. And just to be clear, I am, you know, I'm pro carbon dioxide and I'm pro energy in America. You know, we need fossil fuels and we need pipelines and we need oil, etc. in America right now until someday we all go over to, you know, fusion reactors or whatever, if we even live that long, which is highly doubtful as a civilization, but whatever. So I think Zeldin's doing overall a pretty good job, actually. He may not even be aware of this. This is some vestigial, left-behind kind of terror sect of the EPA that is still just hounding companies for selling useful products to the American people. So I'll keep you posted on this. And as of right now, I don't think that you can purchase from Safrax. But I suppose, I don't know, you could check out their website and see if it's still, if they're still allowing purchases to the U.S. Sounds like they're not going to be able to do that. But if you want to try it, it's at safrax.com, S-A-F-R-A-X.com. And if you use discount code Ranger, they give you, I think, 10% off the products. But again, I'm not sure that they're accepting orders from the U.S. any longer. So, you know, for a lot of these things, it's important to get these items while you can, because you just never know when there's going to be some declared, you know, emergency or pandemic or cyber attack or World War III, or, you know, a U.S. city gets nuked and then all of a sudden we're under military martial law and the Constitution is suspended and you don't have the right to buy garden seeds again, which also happened during COVID in some jurisdictions. So get the stuff you need now, because you just never know when the terrorist federal government or some terror branch of an agency is going to go insane and block your access, which also is what Trump is doing in terms of our access to turmeric from India. You know, you wake up every day like, okay, what kind of supply chain did Donald Trump wreck today? I don't know. Let's turn on the news and see. Okay, there's something else I want to show you here today, changing the subject to AI and human trades, like HVAC, you know, electricians, plumbers, that kind of thing. So here's a very short video from a young guy who's an HVAC specialist, and he wears these AI glasses from Meta, which I would never do because obviously they're spying on you constantly, but he wears them at work, and he says that the glasses, because they have a video camera in them so they can see what you see, so the glasses helped him diagnose a problem with air conditioning. Check out this video. This is pretty wild.
AI isn't coming for my job. I'm an HVAC technician. No, it is. It is. Nah, you're all screwed. You better get rich quick, because I literally was working on a unit. I had not a damn clue. It was better off speaking Chinese to me. I had no idea what was going on with it. Zero zip. I couldn't understand it. See these? I took a picture, took a video, explained what was happening. You know, I gave the symptom. Within 35 seconds, it told me exactly what was wrong with the unit and how to fix it. AI is coming for your job, buddy. It is.
So he says their AI is coming for your job. But that's not really what he described. Technically, he was describing AI augmentation of human workers. So for the record, I've done a lot of pondering on this, a lot of research too. AI is not going to replace HVAC people anytime soon, because there's so much hands-on. You have to crawl around in different spaces to get to the AC units. Robots won't be able to do that for decades, frankly. Same thing with plumbers. Same thing with electricians. There are a lot of trades like that which are hands-on jobs. I'm thinking even like welding and things like that. Yeah, robots and AI can do surgery, but a surgical room is a very controlled room. It's a very controlled environment. You know, the patient is right there, and you know that's exactly where their gallbladder is going to be. You know, you mark the incision here, you know, etc. It's a very repeatable type of procedure to do a gallbladder removal with an AI robot. And that's why those kinds of surgeries are already being automated, and that's going to accelerate. But if you're an HVAC repair person and you go to a person's house and they're like, yeah, let me show you, something's wrong with our air conditioning unit. And you're like, well, where's the unit? Oh, it's up in the crawl space up there with the cobwebs and the spiders and, you know, all the rats. I think there's a couple of raccoons that live up there. You might have to shove them aside, or at least their corpses. And then you'll get to the air conditioning unit. You know, somebody's got to climb up there and look around and figure out what's the problem. And usually the problem is that it's not draining correctly. And the water pan has already filled up and the switch has turned off because there's too much water there. So then the HVAC problem becomes a plumbing problem. Oh, how do we clear this drainage pipe that's filled with, you know, algae or whatever? And guess what the answer is? Chlorine dioxide. Once again, you drop a chlorine dioxide tablet down that HVAC drainage tube, you know, like normally it's a PVC pipe that drains out of your house with your air conditioning condensate, and just water drains out of there. And usually it's like a 3/4 inch diameter PVC pipe. Yeah. Drop a chlorine dioxide tablet down there every couple of months if you want to stop all the mold and algae and everything. And that will solve your problem. It's another great use for chlorine dioxide, by the way. Anyway, AI augmentation is going to help a lot of people carry out a lot of jobs just like that. So here's what we're going to do today. Going to play for you. Actually, I know I'm going to play chapter 4, but I've got this other information to share with you. Oh, I'll figure out what to do. Yeah, you know what? The addendum information that I've just gathered that I was talking about earlier, I'm going to have to put that into chapter 5, which will come out tomorrow, because it doesn't fit in chapter 4. So I misspoke earlier then. That's going to be tomorrow. Today you're going to get chapter 4, The Great Divide, The After Effects and the Collapse of the Middle Class, and what it means in terms of society, the dangerous areas, the safer areas, you know, choosing a proper location to ride this thing out. So that's what we'll cover today, chapter 4 of The Financial Big Bang. So we'll get to that in a second. Let me just thank you for your support of healthrangerstore.com. And whatever you think you might want to buy that maybe comes from India, various herbs and superfoods and some supplements, not just turmeric, but other things, this is a good time to stock up on it. Because these new tariffs, actually, they don't kick in until August 27th. I think that's the date. So that means there's a little bit of time here before the prices really start hiking up or before the supply chain gets crushed. So shop now for all the foods and superfoods and supplements that can help you be healthy. Shop at healthrangerstore.com. And remember, we engage in thorough, multiple mass spec lab testing. We test for glyphosate. We test for heavy metals. We also test for microbiology, E. coli, bacteria, etc. And many other things, depending on the substance. We test for atrazine, for example. That's another weed killer for certain types of foods. So support us at healthrangerstore.com and you will be healthier as a result. And then also, when you want to stockpile a little bit more gold or silver, either one, then visit our sponsor at metalswithmike.com. That will forward you to Battalion Metals, which is our long-term partner. I know it's a relatively new name. It's still the Treasure Island company. They launched a new project with a new site, Battalion Metals. So it's the same group we've been working with for, I don't know, 6 years or whatever it's been, 5 years. I lost track. Same group. They just have a new, you know, a new branding, and they've got new services like new vaulting services and much more. So you can find them at metalswithmike.com. And if you do purchase there, use discount code RANGER, and they will waive the shipping insurance fee. So that'll save you a little bit. All right, with that said, enjoy chapter 4 of today's episode of the book, The Financial Big Bang. And then tomorrow I'll have the new addendum plus chapter 5 for you. Enjoy. All right, welcome to chapter 4 of The Financial Big Bang. I'm Mike Adams, and thank you for joining me here. In the previous chapters of this book, chapter 2, we covered the gold revaluation gambit and looked at how the Federal Reserve seems likely to work with the Treasury to revalue gold to generate lots and lots, I mean trillions of dollars of new money for the federal government to pay off debt holders and try to give the U.S. some more leg room, a few more years, maybe, although our math showed that it's maybe only one extra year. We'll see. And then in chapter three, we talked about stablecoins and how that's designed to find new buyers for treasuries through the stablecoin proxies. We also talked about the possibility of attempting to monetize or collect on student debt, which is the largest asset on the books of the federal government, and maybe even selling off some public lands, etc. And we came to the conclusion that all together, maybe this could raise about $9 trillion, which is, you know, it's about a quarter of the current public debt, the national debt. But it's only a tiny part of the total entitlement obligations. And then I concluded the end of chapter three with the idea that ultimately they're going to have to find a way, I mean, accounting wise, and this is a horrifying thought, but the only way to balance the books is to somehow get rid of a lot of people who are collecting Social Security and pensions and benefits and Medicare, etc. So that's how we ended up chapter three. Now, in chapter four, we're going to talk about the ramifications of all of this. Specifically, if gold is revalued at, let's say, $12,000 or $15,000 an ounce, what will happen next? What does this mean for the price of silver? What does it mean for other fiat currencies? What does it mean for the price of commodities or the price of goods via inflation? So to get answers on this, of course, I listened to a lot of interviews. I dug through a lot of documents. I showed you some of the Federal Reserve documents in the last, or at the end of chapter two. But I also specifically reached out to David Morgan to ask him this question. What happens to silver and other commodities if gold is revalued at, let's say, $15,000 an ounce? And David Morgan provided a very detailed response. He said that the shockwaves that would be sent through the global financial system would crush faith in fiat currencies worldwide, not just in the dollar, but other currencies. He said that initially he thought that it would cause some other currencies such as the euro to rise versus the dollar, because basically the message would be that the only way to save the dollar is to devalue it against gold. And that message would be heard loud and clear across the world's financial markets. So you would see other currencies go up briefly. But overall, fiat currencies would be crushed worldwide, and there would be a mass rush into commodities. Now, I include gold and silver in the large group of commodities. Precious metals is a subgroup of commodities, just as oil is, or aluminum, or fertilizer even, or what have you. But all commodities would go up in dollar value or fiat currency value, and this would be substantial. So the dollar price of copper, for example, could double, triple, quadruple, even more. The dollar price of steel could just skyrocket. Basically, you're watching the accelerated collapse of the dollar. And remember what Andy Shechtman said, that Trump is willing to sacrifice the dollar in order to save the debt market. And this is exactly what that looks like. So the dollar is collapsing in this scenario. Commodities are costing more and more dollars to purchase, obviously. And the end result of this is that people who have the commodities are going to be very well off, while people who primarily hold dollars are going to be financially destroyed. And that's exactly what we talked about in chapter two. But what about the price of silver? Well, David Morgan told me that the price of silver normally would follow gold at some ratio. The gold to silver price ratio, which right now is something more than 80, and it's been, it's been 100 recently, or right around 100. Historically, that ratio is much, much lower. It's typically closer to 20 to 1. Which means that silver has a lot of catching up to do in terms of its price revaluation. And depending on where you think that ratio might go, and also depending on the industrial demand for silver, which is, by the way, suppressed because of the economic downturn. So there are fewer companies building solar panels, for example, that use silver. there are just fewer projects that are using silver because of the economic downturn. But nonetheless, the upward price pressure could push silver into something like $250 an ounce, or even, David Morgan says, $750 an ounce if gold is something like $15,000 an ounce. Now, these are just projections. Nobody knows for sure. But if gold is revalued, it seems that silver, after some lag time, is going to follow relatively quickly. And that makes sense, because we're watching the collapse of the dollar and other fiat currencies relative to all commodities. That's why fertilizer will go up in price. That's why iron ore, like I said, or copper or aluminum, or, you know, frankly, anything, titanium, anything that you need, even oil. The dollar price of oil will go up because all commodities that are purchased in dollars, well, you're going to have to spend more dollars to get them. So the real net effect of this is that this is going to destroy the middle class. There will be no more middle class, essentially. There will only be wealthy people, and those are the people that own or control commodities, and then there will be impoverished people. And those are the people who had all their savings in dollars or dollar-denominated assets, such as treasuries or bank accounts or pensions or things like that, or CDs at a bank. You'll be destroyed if you stay in dollars. Now, the fact that then we will see the destruction of the middle class, this is very bad for society. And I'm not celebrating the idea that you and I know in advance, and yeah, we can position ourselves with extra gold and silver or whatever, and we're going to be fine. I don't want to be fine in a society surrounded by impoverished, desperate, starving people. You know what I mean? I would much rather to have widespread decentralized abundance so that everybody has a chance at making it. You know, I don't want to see starving people. I don't want to see desperate people, because that results in, of course, crime. So if you have gold and silver, you need to realize that as this event unfolds, you're going to have more and more people having to choose between paying the mortgage on their house or buying food or paying for health insurance, let's say. Each one of those is typically thousands of dollars a month right now. And I've seen online videos of people like sobbing older women saying that they have to choose between eating or having health insurance, or maybe selling their house and renting, which is always a long-term losing proposition. So people are going to be desperate. And in that desperation, lots and lots of people are going to turn to crime. So you're going to see a strong rise in robberies, or, you know, maybe kidnappings, break-ins, whatever. You're going to see all kinds of violent crime taking off across America, just out of desperation, because people will be starving at that point. And you're going to see the impoverished masses become very unruly and very unhappy with the powers that be. You're going to see way more uprisings and protests, and not just left-wing Democrats, let's say, not just, you know, Antifa. You're going to see former middle-class conservatives and Christians and Republicans joining the protest because they have been driven into abject poverty. And as this happens, the response from the government is going to be a reactionary, authoritarian crackdown. Now, this authoritarian crackdown, the infrastructure for it, has just been signed into law in Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. The Big Beautiful Bill creates the funding and the infrastructure for massive AI surveillance, biometrics, checkpoints, surveillance towers, facial recognition, gait analysis, all kinds of different ways to spy on people. And the current excuse for that is that we need this technology in order to find all of the illegals. But just like the Patriot Act was ultimately turned against the American people, even though it was initially approved in order to fight terrorism, you know, and to spy on the terrorists. Well, of course, that was turned against the American people. In fact, it was turned against Trump. It was part of the spying on Trump and Trump officials. Well, the same thing is going to happen with this AI surveillance system that's designed to try to remove illegal immigrants from America. That entire infrastructure of AI surveillance is going to be weaponized and used against the American people, possibly under a different administration. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's Trump's plan. But once the infrastructure is in place, of course, anybody can use it, any future president or any future administration, and they will. They will always weaponize it against the American people. There are no exceptions to this. Every law, everything that has ever been passed in order to, you know, make you safer, ultimately gets turned against you. That's just how history works. So America is going to look like a dystopian sci-fi novel with all kinds of AI checkpoints and facial recognition and a surveillance grid government that's spying on all the citizens in order to prevent them from revolting against the financial collapse that has been engineered by Trump, the collapse that's going to wipe out the middle class. So something like maybe 0.1% of the population is going to be okay during all of this. That's going to be the people who have medals, basically, the people who were squared away and who saw what was coming and took action ahead of time. People who own the roof over their heads, let's say, and who have enough assets to pay the crazy, insane inflation prices that will become commonplace. But the vast majority of the population will be destitute, and then, of course, they will turn to desperation. And this will include people that you know. This is why it's important that you don't run around bragging to everybody, you know, how much gold or silver that you have, or that, you know, you have it in your closet or whatever. I mean, this is why I vault gold and silver, because I don't want somebody coming to my place and, you know, trying to get it by force. Of course, even if they tried that, they would have to, you know, dodge bullets. And that brings up the next important point, that self-defense is going to be critical during this time. So because of all the robberies and lootings and home invasions, etc., you're going to have to take extra steps for security. So what you're going to see in society is, of course, the impoverished masses, desperate for food, desperate for shelter. And then you're going to see the well-off people hiring security guards or having walls and security gates or living in compounds where they have extra security, or probably they'll be purchasing security drones, maybe like doggy drones or flying drones that can, you know, scan the perimeter. I've been interested in just finding if there are any like dog robots that can do security. I think that's going to be a very big product area coming up for this very reason, because there will be so many impoverished people that security is going to become a big issue. Now, in this system, you're going to witness the rapid breakdown of society, the breakdown of the rule of law. Of course, those who have money and political power will be immune to any kind of justice. They will be able to, you know, get out of anything. They can do anything they want. And the court system will never hold them accountable. We're almost there right now, but it's going to get a lot worse. You're going to see a lot more people refusing to pay taxes, arguing that they cannot even afford it, because if they pay taxes, then they can't afford to eat, or they can't afford to pay the mortgage on their home, things like that. So you'll see an erosion of income taxes, and again, a lot more protests against the government at the same time. The streets of our cities are going to collapse even further into chaos and lawlessness. You're going to see more people turn to drugs and addictions. And so much of the country, at least the urban areas, it's going to look a lot like Chicago or LA or downtown Seattle or Philadelphia, for that matter, which is really saying something. And this is the future of America. Until the collapse happens, there will be a collapse. The dollar will one day go to zero. The treasuries will go to zero. The U.S. government will default, and it will break apart almost certainly. And then Washington, D.C. will be no more. And from there, it's kind of up to us to decide what happens next. But this entire process could take many years. It could take a decade or even longer. And during this process, you're going to see all kinds of AI automation taking more jobs, more factory jobs, more desk jobs, more government jobs, more tech jobs. You're going to see mass layoffs, mass joblessness, even among the well-educated. And this is only going to exacerbate the collapse and decline of the U.S. empire. And that's why the powers that be probably prefer something like a nuclear war to take all these people out before they rise up against the government system. Understand that, you know, a couple hundred million unhappy, starving people, that's a threat to the power system. I mean, you know, the political power. So they don't want that to happen. They would much rather find a way to eliminate those people than to see them rise up. So these are some very important things to think about. So let's pivot for the rest of this chapter. And I want to discuss the importance of where you are as all of this goes down. So we're going to see very different impacts regionally. And I want to talk about that in more detail. But the overall emphasis here is that, again, the middle class is wiped out. We have a large number of desperate, impoverished people who can't afford food, can't afford housing, can't afford insurance, etc. We have a very small number of very wealthy people who can hire armed guards, etc. But almost no middle class. Now, in this environment, think about it for yourself. Do you want to be around a high population density area with a lot of impoverished, desperate people? The answer is no, of course not. So as I've always said, cities are death traps, and you don't want to be in the downtown areas, that's for sure. You don't want to be in these cities as all of this unfolds, because cities will be the anarchy zones. And I do believe that law enforcement will declare entire sectors of large cities like LA to be just no-go zones. Like, we're not even going to try to police those. Maybe East St. Louis, maybe, you know, South Chicago, I don't know. Different areas, maybe areas of New York City for that matter. If it's not already destroyed by the socialist Mamdani, or is it Mamdani or Mamdani? Anyway, it's Mom something, and he's going to destroy New York City with his policies. But that's even separate from all of this that's happening. Nevertheless, think carefully about where you want to be. Now, it's very important to be, in my opinion, in a high, polite sector of the country. And by high, polite, what I mean is a place where people tend to follow the rules on their own. Well, that's not New York City. That's not Boston. You know, that's not Chicago. It's typically like a small rural town somewhere, usually in a red state, sometimes in the Bible Belt, but not always. You can find small towns of relatively honest people in Arizona or rural Colorado or Utah for that matter, right? So that's where you want to focus your attention. And if you're already in a place like that, that's great. I mean, this is a very late time to get up and move. But you also want to reevaluate where you are right now and see if you're in a danger zone where you might want to move in the time remaining. Now, I believe that the impacts of these economic events that we're talking about here, the Big Bang event, the impacts will not be universally felt across the United States or even Canada or Europe or other countries. It's going to be a very broad spectrum of effects. In some areas, the effects will be minimal. That's sort of the law and order type of towns in rural Texas, for example, or rural Tennessee, or frankly, a lot of rural areas. Rural, you know, Oklahoma, Missouri, whatever. I think that people in those areas are going to be relatively well off. I think you're going to find a lot of local cooperation. You're going to see the spontaneous rise of, you know, farmers markets. And you're going to see high security because local law enforcement will, they will not put up with looters. I think they'll shoot the looters or hang them and like hang them over Broadway Street, you know, just to send a message like, this is what happens if you loot in this town. Oh, okay. Now we know. In the cities, though, law enforcement will be hampered in their ability to do anything, as even they are right now, you know, because the city mayor will tell them to back off and don't enforce the laws and don't arrest the looters, certainly don't shoot the looters, etc. So what you're going to see in those areas is a breakdown of law enforcement and the rise of criminal gangs that will become their own very powerful local power structures. And in many areas of certain cities, like L.A., and probably, you know, San Diego and, you know, take your pick, Denver, you're probably going to see gangs running things rather than law enforcement. Remember the Chaz Zone in Seattle a few years back? That was a tryout, a little pilot project for this. And the police didn't even bother to go in there. The police would not go in and take back Seattle. and that was during relative peacetime. And Chaz was run by criminal gangs. And if you wanted to move through Chaz or do business in Chaz or, you know, sell your human trafficking cargo, which is kind of what Chaz was doing, then you had to pay a tribute to the gang leaders of Chaz. And that's the way it's going to operate in a lot of areas. So you can expect that if you want to exit a downtown area when all of this happens, you're going to have to pay dearly. It's going to be more than just an exit toll. It might be a price too heavy to even pay. It might be, we'll let you leave. Give us everything you own. Give us the keys to your house. Give us your daughter. You know what I'm saying? When there's no law, anything goes. The criminality runs rampant. And that's what you're going to see if you get stuck in these areas. So it's critical to be in the right place before this happens. Now, you may recall when the war on Ukraine started back in 2022, there was a very short time window there. It was late February. It was February 22nd, I believe, when Russia attacked Ukraine with the special military operation. For a short period of time, you could get out of Ukraine. If you had the proper passports, etc., there was mobility. That window of opportunity closed very quickly. I don't recall exactly how long it was. It seems like it was a matter of maybe less than 2 weeks or something like that. And the people who really wanted to get out, for the most part, they were able to, but they had to leave behind a lot of things, their home, their belongings, etc. And that's the other thing to get into your head right now. You might face a situation where you need to mobilize, and in doing so, you are going to sacrifice your assets. You're going to sacrifice your home. You're going to sacrifice, you know, your pickup truck or your gun collection or your ammo boxes or whatever, you know. You're going to save your dog. You're going to bring at least one rifle with you, you know, etc. But you might have to leave a lot of things behind. You need to be mentally equipped to be able to do that. The area where you are living might be overrun. Might be overrun by chaotic domestic forces, or it might be foreign forces that invade once they see how weak America has become. So mobility is key, and having a go bag in your vehicle is also absolutely critical. And this is why I've also reinforced many times the idea of having a diesel vehicle, even though they are more expensive and they're more expensive to work on. But a diesel vehicle allows you to store diesel fuel, which will store for up to 10 years. And then you're not reliant on gas stations, because that's obviously where things are going to go off the rails. Most people have to line up and get gas. You don't have to. If you have a diesel vehicle and you have some extra diesel, you know, with you in the back of the truck or whatever, in some rugged steel diesel containers, because diesel is much safer to transport and handle than is gasoline. By far, diesel's so much safer. Diesel is actually hard to ignite. I've talked about this before. So storing diesel gives you that off-grid sustainability. It can power your diesel generator, and it can power your diesel vehicle if you have to bug out. But remember, primarily, you don't want to bug out. Your best place to be is at home. Every time you leave your home, there's a risk. There's a risk of you being robbed or shot on the road. There's a risk of carjacking. You know, I'm talking about in a collapse scenario. There's all kinds of risks from leaving your home. So if you can stay, then definitely do that and make sure you can defend yourself. And that's going to require, of course, working with your local community, knowing your neighbors, maybe knowing your sheriff, and also having your own firearms and ammunition and the know-how to use them if necessary in your self-defense. You're going to need a night vision or a thermal scope or a thermal monocular so you can have somebody keep watch on your property at nighttime and you can see incoming threats. And I also want to encourage you to think about drones, because right now, drones are the best way to monitor your property. You can launch a drone. You can do monitoring from the air. There are a lot of relatively affordable thermal drones now that are very good at search and rescue operations, which is very often the same as a perimeter security operation. And if you're buying one of these drones, all you got to do, if you're talking to a salesperson or whatever, like there's a company, floridadronesupply.com is one that I've seen. They have a lot of videos. You're talking to the salespeople, and you probably don't want to say, yeah, I need a thermal drone so I can spot, you know, rogue humans in the middle of a Mad Max scenario. You just say, I live on a ranch and we're trying to find, you know, lost cattle or whatever. Or I'm going to donate time to the local sheriff's department for search and rescue operations. I mean, you don't have to go all out with your full explanation of why you need a thermal drone. You know, exercise wisdom. And then let's talk about forms of money, because you're going to need to be able to obviously purchase things. Barter works, but it's very inefficient. It's hard to find somebody that needs exactly what you have that you want to trade with. So, of course, currency becomes critically important. Well, what will be the local currency? That's going to depend on where you are when it all hits the fan. If you're in a place like Texas or Florida or Utah, then the state itself is well prepared for launching its own new currency. I know Texas is well prepared. They're gearing up for it. But a lot of other states like California and New York and basically blue states, they won't have any idea what to do because they don't understand economics or currency or anything. And there, it's probably going to very quickly go from dollars to silver. Or maybe spendable forms of gold, such as goldbacks. But silver will be the poor man's currency, so to speak, or the common man's currency. Silver will be used in a lot of commerce, even more than gold, because of the smaller denomination units of silver. So you'll want to have some 1 ounce silver coins and maybe even some constitutional silver or junk silver, as it's called, which are the 90% silver U.S. mint coins like quarters and dimes and things like that. And those are available from pretty much all the gold and silver retailers. You can get bags of so-called junk silver. And it's not a bad idea to do that. And they're all pre-1963, I think it is. I keep forgetting the exact year, but I think it's pre-1963 coins that had the 90% silver content. You know, back when money was money, before it was just a debt obligation. Yeah. So while the dollar is easily recognizable in terms of cash, it will, of course, be plummeting in value, possibly by the day. So while I think it is a good idea to have some amount of hard green cash, or whatever cash you have in your country, I wouldn't overdo it. I would instead invest in silver or gold or gold backs or, you know, different forms of precious metals. And, you know, your best value per ounce is to just buy silver and gold coins from a recognizable mint. And of course, you can call our sponsor on that if you wish. MetalsWithMike.com takes you to Battalion Metals. If you use the discount code Ranger, they'll waive the shipping insurance fee. That'll save you a little bit. And they'll get you honest pricing, honest, legit coins from recognized mints, including the U.S. Mint if you want, although there's a higher premium for that, obviously. Or you can buy gold backs that are spendable gold, you know. You can get those at verifiedgoldbacks.com. That's our site. We show the lab testing results there. There's other forms of gold and silver, all kinds of things. You know, there's silver and gold jewelry, for example, that will have some value, but not an easily recognized value. There's also silver bars. There's gold bars, but I don't recommend those because it's, you know, much less spendable. So you'll need probably some ammo. 9mm ammo will be as good as cash. Same with .22 long rifle ammo. Probably AR-15 ammo, which is 5.56. That will be as good as cash in many areas, especially in areas where obviously firearms are widely owned, like Texas or other southern states or even Midwestern states. So it's a good idea to diversify in all of this. I happen to think that a really great barter item is going to be iodine, because iodine is very hard to get. Even right now, for us as a company to buy a large amount of iodine, it can sometimes be tricky because, I don't know if you knew this, but the DEA has some kind of oversight on iodine because apparently it's used in the chemistry to make meth. I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch Breaking Bad, so I don't know how the chemistry works on making meth. I don't know why it would even need to use iodine. That seems very odd to me. But apparently that's one of the things you can do with iodine. However, I think a far better use is to protect your thyroid gland from the fallout of iodine-131 in this case, obviously. But there's also cesium-137 that's falling out following a nuclear detonation. So I think that iodine, which protects from radioactive iodine, just to be clear, it doesn't protect from cesium. But iodine is going to be a very valuable barter item, maybe more valuable than gold, if there's a nuclear war, obviously. And it's relatively cheap and available right now. You can buy it at our store if you want, healthrangerstore.com. Just search for iodine. You can see it right there. Again, going to be impossible to get at some point. Other barter items that will have high value will include coffee and cigarettes and alcohol, you know, whiskey and vodka and whatever. And I like to recommend people storing large amounts of vodka, because vodka, you know, high alcohol content, basically cheap vodka, can be used to make herbal extracts so that you can make your own medicine. And remember that the best mixture as a solvent in order to extract the medicinal compounds from most herbs is 50% alcohol and 50% water. So you can roughly just mix half and half vodka and water. I know that's not exactly 50-50 because vodka is not 100% alcohol, but if it's in the ballpark, it's okay. You're going to get a good extraction of your herbs. You'll be able to make medicine. You can maybe barter medicine, sell medicine, stockpile it, use it yourself for all your medical needs, etc. You might end up healthier in a collapse than you are in the current, you know, medical death care system. Frankly, a lot of people would be healthier just to stop going to the pharmacy, stop going to the doctor, you know. Which may happen. I'm not saying that you should do that right now. I mean, you know, make up your own mind on your medical situation. But all these drugs they have people on are not really making people healthier overall. There may be certain cases where it does, but overall it's not. Anyway, the bottom line in all of this is that you need to make sure you're in a location that seems amenable to carrying out trade. You know, farmers markets that has strong local law enforcement and no willingness to put up with looters and robberies and things like that. So you want to be basically in a pro-Second Amendment county with a pro-Second Amendment sheriff. You want to be outside the city. You want to be in a red county, in a red state. And you want to be well-armed and you want to have neighbors that are pretty self-reliant. It's good to have neighbors who are farmers, for example. Farmers tend to be very, very capable. And if you get into a rural area, which I strongly recommend, then you'll find people who have welding skills, people who have tractor repair skills. You know, you'll find people who know how to build fences and take care of cows and milk a cow, you know, all kinds of things like that, or raise chickens. And these are extremely valuable skills for surviving in these scenarios, because you don't want to be in a city when the Mad Max scenario comes to town. You're going to be dead very quickly. You want to be in a low population density area. Now, you can download and listen to my entire book called Resilient Prepping, which is free of charge, by the way. It's at resilientprepping.com. And there I talk about all these skills, the high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech solutions for survival, including food and medicine, self-defense and shelter, you know, heating, cooling, transportation, mending clothing, all kinds of things like that. So definitely download that book if that interests you. But the bottom line is, for this chapter, make sure you are in the right place, because the scenario I'm describing, this is coming. This is about to happen, and it's not going to be pretty. All right, so that's about it for chapter 4. Want to encourage you to follow my interviews and podcasts. You can find them at brighteon.com. My channel is HR Report. You can follow my articles at naturalnews.com, or you can follow my social media posts on X. I'm Health Ranger, or brighteon.social is our uncensored social media platform. And we also have brighteon.io, which is a decentralized blockchain operated platform. You can find me on all these platforms, and be sure to use our AI engine, Enoch. It's free to use. It's at brighteon.ai, and it's trained on all of the rural survival skills, everything that you can imagine, from, you know, how to preserve peaches or whatever, you know, how to build a root cellar, everything that you can think of. Enoch knows how to do it, because I trained it on all this material. I mean, thousands and thousands of books and millions of pages of content, much of it focused on off-grid survival and basically homesteading type of things. So anything you want to know how to do, just ask Enoch. And again, it's free, so the price is right. We provide that to you as a gift to thank you for your support. And if you'd like to support us, and if you'd like to boost up your food supply, shop with us at healthrangerstore.com. And we use the profits from Health Ranger Store to build platforms for freedom and survival. And that's how we came up with Enoch at brighteon.ai. So thank you for all of your support. Thanks for listening. And coming up next will be Chapter 5. Get ready. It's going to be a fun one. When you're ready for the cleanest, most nutrient-dense foods and superfoods and nutritional supplements, personal care products, do yourself a favor, do your health a favor, and shop with us at healthrangerstore.com. We have our own mass spec laboratory where we do our own in-house testing for heavy metals, for glyphosate, for bacteria, yeast, and mold, and E. coli, and salmonella, and so much more. We do more extensive testing for the cleanliness and the authenticity of foods than any other company that I've ever heard of. And you can get all of this right now, the cleanest, most nutrient-dense foods at healthrangerstore.com, plus all these amazing categories. We've got personal care solutions for you, from toothpaste and shampoo and body soap to preparedness items such as freeze-dried fruits and superfoods in number 10 cans that are sealed and good for very long-term shelf-stable storage. We've got home care products such as cleaning concentrates and laundry detergents, automatic dishwasher detergent, and so on. And of course, we never use fragrance chemicals. We never use artificial dyes. We never use fillers or garbage or anything like that. Nearly everything that we sell is certified organic and non-GMO. And even our vitamin C is non-China vitamin C, non-GMO vitamin C. So shop with us. You'll be glad you did. And we have freeze-dried tart cherries available right now in number 10 cans and in pouches. And those are delicious. You can eat them like snacks. You'll love those. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. And thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.